Hi, everybody. Welcome to Intuitive Awakening. My name is Dina. Thank you so much for joining me for this week's really interesting and crazy episode. Today, I'm going to be talking to you about ancient astronauts, ancient aliens. Now, if you have access to the History Channel, or let's say you've kind of perused the History Channel over the past probably 5 to 10 years, there has been this show called Ancient Aliens, and I have family members who actually are hardcore Ancient Aliens enthusiasts, and I've sat down and watched some episodes with them, but I remain ultra skeptical because, as all of you know, I have a very intense archaeological background. I've studied lots of cultures and analyzed a lot of artifacts, and having looked at their interpretations of some of the same artifacts and ancient quote-unquote like history, I'm very skeptical about their interpretations because obviously they have an agenda. However, it's worth researching and analyzing and taking a look at. So I've decided to do that today. I feel like this topic is insanely huge, so I have really tried my best to synthesize all the information, and I'm sure I'm going to leave a lot of information out, so please forgive me. I don't really intend to do another episode on this topic whatsoever, so I will give you all I got today. Let's talk about ancient astronauts. So ancient astronauts, or ancient aliens, refers to the pseudo-scientific idea that intelligent extraterrestrial beings visited Earth and made contact with humans in antiquity and prehistoric times. Proponents suggest that this contact influenced the development of modern cultures. It also influenced, I would say, the development of technology, their religious beliefs, and even human biology. The idea that ancient astronauts existed is not really taken seriously by most academics and has received no credible attention in even, of course, peer-reviewed studies. When proponents of the idea present evidence in favor of their beliefs, it is often, it is said that it's often distorted or fabricated, again, with the whole idea that they are trying to support their theory. Now, if you remember, and I believe this is in the 1950s, you had the whole crash at Roswell. At least it's said that there was like an alien crash at Roswell. However, around that time, in the 1960s and 1970s, there's literature is being produced. Of course, you have sci-fi being produced in alignment with the crashes at Roswell and probably Area 51 too. But you have this literature by a few authors around that time, the 60s and the 70s, in support of these ancient aliens or ancient astronaut theories. And one of them goes by the name, the author, his name is Zachariah Sitchin. Now, again, if you've been looking at this stuff for a long time, his name is not going to be new whatsoever. When I was in my early 20s, I heard of Zachariah Sitchin because he was an author of the book called The 12th Planet, and I had family members who were actually reading this book and who really believed in the knowledge of this book. I remain extremely skeptical, and I wasn't sure if it was worthy of study, but let me tell you a little bit about Zachariah Sitchin. So he's the author of, it's a multitude of books proposing an explanation for human origins involving ancient astronauts. So in his first book, The 12th Planet, he argues that Sumerian myths of a pantheon of gods, and this is an ancient Sumer, one of the oldest cultures or one of the oldest civilizations found on the earth, that their myths of a pantheon of gods are no less than fact, and that Earth's solar system includes an additional planet called Char, which comes near Earth every 3,600 years on an elliptical orbit that takes it deep into space. The planet, he claims, is inhabited by advanced alien beings called the Nephilim. Now, this is super, super important, you guys. I'm going to be talking about the Nephilim during the second half of this podcast, but please don't forget this term. So based on a Sumerian origin myth, he recounts how the arrival of this planet formed the solar system as we know it, and he credits the Nephilim for advancing humanity and also for the stories of the Great Flood, okay? So remember that this is some, these are these ancient aliens called the Nephilim who inhabit this planet called Shar, as we know it right now, which comes near Earth every 3,600 years on an elliptical orbit. That's why right now we apparently cannot see it. So that's where we are right now. So the author gives a history of the archaeological investigation into ancient societies in this book, tracing the known culture of ancient Greece back to earlier cultures, finally arriving at the earliest known civilization of Sumer. He gives the impression that earlier cultures were more advanced than later ones, and that Sumer arose suddenly and was amazingly advanced. In this way, he shrouds Sumer in mystery. Very similarly, the author gives the stories of the Greek and Roman gods and traces similar stories through other cultures arriving at the Sumerian mythology. Now, the main mythological characters are Anu, a distant father god, and two sons, and this is important, Enlil and Enki, who vie for superiority and power. This is, sounds very, very science fiction, right? But stick with me. So the gods come from above and they travel to Earth, walking among the people. The author interprets the Sumerian myths as being factual accounts of alien beings from an extra planet in Earth's solar system that came to Earth 450,000 years ago to do what? To mine for gold and other rare minerals. And now these aliens had helicopter-type flying devices to move around the Earth. They had powerful weapons and rockets to travel to their planet. The author claims that the missing planet, which we called Shar, follows a 3,600-mile elliptical orbit from deep space to the asteroid belt. Coming from outer space, the planet crashed through the solar system, pushing Pluto onto its current orbit and cutting one planet in half, creating Earth out of one side and the asteroid belt out of the debris. It also knocked the moon into place. The author claims, or he gets this information from his own interpretation of Sumerian myths and says these are factual accounts. So while on Earth, the inhabitants of Shar, which, remember, the author calls the Nephilim, you might hear it called the Nephilim, so these inhabitants of Shar genetically engineered humans as a slave race to help with mining. Now, one of the characters we mentioned earlier, Enlil, became unhappy because Enki, which is his brother, gave humans the ability to reproduce. Enlil decided to destroy humans and so did not tell them of the coming deluge, or what is this, the story of Noah, right? The Great Flood. So the author interprets the deluge as tidal waves from the end of the last ice age. Enki, one of the brothers, played the role of God in saving Noah. Mankind survived, and after the Great Flood, the gods gave mankind agriculture and helped humans build civilization. The humans tried to build a rocket ship, but the gods broke them into three different groups, giving each a different language, which the story sounds kind of similar to what story in the Bible, the Tower of Babel. So after this episode, what happens? Where did these ancient aliens go? Well, they went back to their planet. And it's interesting because I've heard, in his book and in other sources, he calls this planet by two different names. One of the names is Shar, and the other one, which I've seen more commonly, it's called Nibiru. Anyway, the premise is that this planet, again, is quite far out into deep space, but eventually will make its way around, and apparently we will see it. So this group of ancient aliens is set to return. I don't know the exact year that they proposed, but is that they will come back again, that they, you know, interfered with genetic modifications of the people to make them more of like a slave race to do a lot of this mining for this ancient
alien race of people. So this is one proposal of how humans have evolved through time. There's another author who was way more popular before Zachariah Sitchin published his book On the 12th Planet, and his name is Eric von Daniken, and you've probably really heard him mentioned in Ancient Aliens as well as Zachariah Sitchin. But Eric von Daniken wrote a book in 1968 called Chariots of the Gods: Unsolved Mysteries of the Past, and it's highly referenced amongst people who really believe in this Ancient Aliens theory. Now, this book involves the hypothesis that the technologies and religions of many ancient civilizations were given to them by what? Ancient astronauts who were welcomed as gods. And this is a common theme you'll find in ancient alien theory, that a lot of the gods that were worshipped, especially in places like Mesopotamia and ancient Egypt, where you see these figures in statues that are half human and half animal. These are supposed to be representations of these gods from, I guess, various other places in deep space who have made many trips to Earth and had many visitations amongst all these civilizations a long time ago. So the book Chariots of the Gods posits a variety of hypotheses dealing with the possibility of an extraterrestrial being or series of beings who influence ancient technology. So the author suggests that some ancient structures and artifacts appear to represent higher technological knowledge than is presumed to have existed at the times they were manufactured. The author maintains that these artifacts were produced either by these alien visitors or by the humans who learned the necessary knowledge from them. Here are some of the examples of the artifacts or structures. The first one is, Egyptian pyramids, Stonehenge. Also, the statues on Easter Island. I don't know what to call those people. I can't pronounce it correctly, and I don't want to disrespect their culture, but I have seen the statues on Easter Island. If you have not, you can Google it. They'll pop right up. Additionally, he uses the Nazca Lines. The ancient Nazca Lines are hundreds of huge ground drawings etched into the high desert of southern Peru. Some are stylized animals and humanoid figures, while others are merely straight lines hundreds of meters long. As the figures were made to be seen from a great height, they have been linked with the ancient astronaut hypothesis. Now, von Daniken popularized a notion that the Nazca lines and the figures could have been made according to instructions from aircraft, and that the longer and wider lines might be runways for spacecraft. So according to an archaeologist, unrelated, he says that von Daniken's extraterrestrial interpretation is not supported by any evidence. However, it's kind of food for thought, though, given that you really can't see these unless you are very, very, very high up. So his book, The Chariots of the Gods, it goes on to suggest that the origins of religions, including interpretations of the Old Testament and the Bible, are reactions to contact with an alien race. So according to the author, humans considered the technology of the aliens to be supernatural and the aliens themselves to be gods. So he asks if the oral and literal traditions of most religions contain references to visitors from stars and vehicles traveling through air and space. These, he says, should be interpreted as literal descriptions which have changed during the passage of time and become more obscure. One example that von Daniken uses comes from the Old Testament, and I want to talk about this, and this will probably come up again. And it's in the book of Ezekiel. So in the Old Testament, chapter 1 of the book of Ezekiel, Ezekiel has a vision. And Ezekiel, he sees an immense cloud, okay, that contains fire and emits lightning and brilliant light. And then it continues as follows. The center of the fire looked like glowing metal, and in the fire was what looked like four living creatures. These creatures are described as winged and humanoid. They sped back and forth like flashes of lightning, and fire moved back and forth among the creatures. The passage goes on to describe four shiny objects, each appearing like a wheel intersecting a wheel. These objects could fly, and they moved with the creatures. When the living creatures moved, the wheels beside them moved, and when the living creatures rose from the ground, the wheels also rose. So he uses this example to pretty much say that Ezekiel wasn't, you know, just having one of those biblical visions that the prophets had. He was actually seeing and interacting with this alien race of people and their spaceship / aircraft. So I want to talk to you now about a legend that exists within Egypt during a time known as Zeptepi. Zeptepi is an ancient Egyptian phrase meaning first time. It refers to an epoch over 12,000 years ago when what? Divine beings arrived through the void to settle in Egypt. The gods shared their wisdom and civilized the primitive humans. So according to this legend, a contingent of godlike beings settled in Egypt and exhibited an advanced spiritual technology that enabled them to transform matter. These angelic visitors were the first alchemists, and they practiced their art in a temple hidden near the Nile River. According to hieroglyphic texts, the visitors originated from different levels in the firmament, and their bodies were more subtle than humans. Whether for purposes of breeding or out of sheer lust, the visitors were described as unable to resist the temptations of the flesh and desperately wanted to marry young women and have children. The results of these unions were described as giants who had dominion over the earth and its creatures. Creepy stuff, right? So oddly, the idea of angelic visitors lusting after humans is part of many religious texts around the world. And believe it or not, you find this partially in Genesis and in what? The book of Enoch, which is not a part of the canon of the Bible, but is considered a part of it in Ethiopia and maybe more of Eastern Africa. Don't quote me on that, but I know for sure in Ethiopia. Now, like I just said, this idea of these visitors lusting after humans is also a part of Genesis. Very, very strange stuff. This is what brings me to what I mentioned earlier in Zechariah Sitchin's book, The 12th Planet, where he talks about this this extraterrestrial race of people from that planet Shar, also known as Nibiru, and they're called the Nephilim. Well, most interestingly enough, the Nephilim are mentioned in the Bible. Super, super strange. So now I'm going to shift to talk to you about the Nephilim in the Bible and then the Nephilim in the book of Enoch. Genesis 6, 1 through 5 describes fallen angels who wanted to have children with the daughters of men. In exchange, they taught men what? Magic and metallurgy and how to make tinctures to capture the essence of plants. Now, this story is elaborated in considerable detail in the Old Testament book called the Book of Enoch, which you're not going to find in your actual Bible itself, but you may find it in a Bible in Eastern Africa. So let's talk a little bit more about these Nephilim in the Bible. I'm going to read to you from the Bible so you can hear this for yourself. And so there's quotes around this. When human beings began to increase in number on the earth and daughters were born to them, the sons of God saw that the daughters of humans were beautiful and they married any of them they chose. Then the Lord said, "My spirit will not contend with humans forever, for they are mortal. Their days will be 120 years. The Nephilim were on the earth in those days, and also afterward, when the sons of God went to the daughters of humans and had children by them. They were the heroes of old, men of renown." It's actually plausible that the Nephilim were partly both fallen angels and giants. So according to Genesis 6, 1 through 4,
The Nephilim were the children of the relations between the sons of God and the daughters of men. Christian scholars have theorized that the sons of God were fallen angels, or, the word I don't like, demons, who were reproduced with human females or possessed human males, who then bore children with human females. Being the offspring of partial angelic heredity, the Nephilim were considered mighty men who were of old. So why would fallen angels reproduce with the humans, right? Or are they fallen angels, or are they this ancient alien race? Crazy. Why would they reproduce with the humans? So as to a clear motive, one consideration is that the fallen angels were trying to distort the human lineage in order to stop the arrival of the Messiah. Now, when I say the fallen angels, again, I'm referring here to the demons. God had reassured mankind that the Messiah would one day, in quotes, crush the head of Satan in Genesis, right? The fallen sons of God in Genesis 6 were perhaps seeking to prevent this and make it impossible for an innocent seed of the woman to be born. It's just such a weird, weird story, because you do find in the Bible, again, these giants. And these were called the Nephilim, or the Nephilim, who were half human and half something else. It just sounds like Lord of the Rings when you're reading this stuff. So according to Hebrew doctrine, like the Book of Enoch, the Nephilim were a breed of giants and superhumans who performed deeds of exceptional evil. Their large size and power probably came from the merger of this angelic DNA with humans. There are actually really only two explicit references to the Nephilim in the biblical text. So first in Genesis 6:4, which is essentially what I read to you. But then you have a second mention of them in Numbers 13:33. We saw the Nephilim there. We seemed like grasshoppers in our own eyes, and we looked the same to them. It's so strange. If you think of the story of David and Goliath as well, it has been proposed that Goliath was also one of the Nephilim. Okay, so let's talk about the Nephilim and the Great Flood. So it's speculated by Christian scholars that the Nephilim were one of the main causes for the Great Flood in Noah's era. Promptly after the reference of the Nephilim or Nephilim, Genesis states this: "The Lord saw how great man's wickedness on the earth had become, and that every inclination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil all the time. The Lord was grieved that he had made man on the earth, and his heart was filled with pain. So the Lord said, I will wipe mankind, whom I have created, from the face of the earth, men and animals and creatures that move along the ground and birds of the air, for I am grieved that I have made them. God then flooded the whole earth, killing everyone and everything other than Noah and his family and the animals on the ark. Everyone else was supposed to have died, including the Nephilim." It's such a strange story. But again, you have these ancient astronaut theorists who propose or utilize this story, if you want to call it a story, you can, or these parts of scripture in the Bible, and say that, well, here's the evidence that this group, the Nephilim, they were actually part of this ancient alien race. Very bizarre. Okay, let me see if I wanted to add anything else about the Nephilim. This is a big topic, and I'm really trying to make sure I get everything out so you guys have a comprehensive view. We're now going to move on to the Old Testament apocryphal book of Enoch, because this book also kind of talks about the Nephilim, which is just so bizarre. So the first section of the book depicts the interaction of the fallen angels with mankind
And it does list the name of these angels. And because I am so strange, I don't like to say the names, so I'm not going to. But you are more than free to buy this book on your own and read it because it is incredibly fascinating. Okay, but it's important to say that the first section of this book, it does talk about the interaction of these fallen angels and what they do with the people on the earth. So you have one angel who steps up and he compels the other 199 fallen angels to take human wives to give them children, okay? So I'm going to read what this angel, who was their leader, what they said unto them. And this is, again, in the book of Enoch. I fear ye will not indeed agree to do this deed, and I alone shall have to pay the penalty of a great sin. And they all answered him and said, let us all swear an oath, and all bind ourselves by mutual imprecations, not to abandon this plan, but to do this thing. Then swear they all together, and bound themselves by mutual imprecations upon it. And they were in all 200, who descended in the days of Jared on the summit of Mount Hermon, and they called it Mount Hermon, because they had sworn and bound themselves by mutual imprecations upon it. And then it gives the name of the leaders, all right there. This decision that they have, results in the creation of the Nephilim, or what's also called the Anakim or the Anak, which means what? Giants, as they're described in the book. Very, very weird. Okay. And then here's more from the book of Enoch. And then they became pregnant, and they bare great giants whose height was 300 ells, who consumed all the acquisitions of men. And when men could no longer sustain them, the giants turned against them and devoured mankind. And they began to sin against birds and beasts and reptiles and fish, and to devour one another's flesh and drink the blood. So you have these crazy giants who are running, you know, across the earth, who are impregnating women, having these demigods, if you want to call them that, having these giants, right, who are eating other people after they've eaten everything on the land, and they're wreaking havoc everywhere. But what's also very interesting during this time, what else is going on, and this is according to the book of Enoch specifically, that these fallen angels end up teaching humans a lot of things that they were not supposed to know, apparently. And so it does mention the angels' name or the angels by name, which I will not state again. But, and then you had this angel teach men how to make swords and knives and shields and breastplates, and taught them how to use and how to essentially acquire the metals of the earth, and taught the art of working them. You also had angels step forward who taught how to make jewelry, bracelets, ornaments. You had another angel step forward who taught people how to beautify themselves, how to use makeup, which is strange, or what they say specifically here is beautifying the eyelids. And then they teach them about all kinds of costly stones and all coloring tinctures. And then there arose much godlessness, according to this book, and they committed fornication, and they were led astray, and became corrupt in all their ways. They were taught enchantments and root cuttings. They were taught astrology and the constellations. They were taught what they called the knowledge of the clouds and the signs of the earth and the signs of the sun and the course of the moon. It's a strange story. There's so much more in this book. I do say read it. I read it many years ago, and having researched this again, it brought all that back to my mind, like how I thought this was the craziest thing I'd ever heard as well. And no wonder they didn't put the full story in there. I forgot to mention, because this is super important, that the Book of Enoch is said to have been composed in the 4th or 3rd century BC, according to Western scholars. So you can kind of give yourself a timeline here. If you're interested in reading the Book of Enoch, one thing to note is that in the first section of the book, Enoch describes the fall of these angels, but they're also called the Watchers. So you might use the words interchangeable since the Watchers were the angels who fathered the Nephilim. Also in the Book of Enoch, as a side note, he really takes the time for the rest of the book to narrate the heavens. The whole book is not only just about the stuff that we just discussed, but also when Enoch travels to the heavens and he describes everything that he saw, which is such a wild trip in itself, because it's probably not as you would imagine it. And when I say as you would imagine it, most of us, when we were growing up, had this view of, okay, we go high in the sky and we're sitting on the fluffy clouds and there's an old white man with a long beard and then we're good to go. Or we're passing these pearly gates and then there's heaven and I don't know what we're supposed to be doing the rest of the time. But this is totally not at all what Enoch saw. And supposedly in the Old Testament, I mean, Enoch is mentioned like so briefly in there, maybe one or two sentences at the very most. And all we know is that Enoch was a good man and God loved him and took him. Point blank. However, outside of the canonized Bible, in the Book of Enoch, you actually get to see, I'm assuming, what Enoch saw when God took him. And it's such a crazy trip because I guess in my mind, it kind of, I don't know if this sounds crazy, but it kind of also makes sense to me in terms of what he saw to a certain degree. It's very intense and sometimes it can be a very tedious read. But the one thing that I remembered, and I know this is deviating a little bit, but the one thing that I remembered was his ascent to what we call today heaven and how it didn't look anything like what we expected, but how it looked more like ascending through fire and how the higher you go, the hotter it is and the brighter it is, and how God in itself, as seen, I guess, by Enoch, was like the hottest inferno you could imagine, which is interesting given that we would imagine hell to be the hottest inferno. So if you're interested in this book, there's a lot going on in the Book of Enoch, but it does talk a lot about these angels who had fallen, and then it also does reveal what happens to them at, quote-unquote, the end times, and where they're being held, and it does reveal their names and all that other jazz. Okay. I wanted to go back to one last thing because I thought you guys would find it very interesting, as I did throughout my little research here. But do you know how we were talking earlier about that legend in Egypt about those godlike beings who settled in Egypt and were very advanced spiritually and very advanced with their technology and how they were lusting after humans, etc.? Well, who were these mysterious visitors to Egypt? I'm going to give you some history here. There was a guy, his name is Zosimus. He's the father of Greek alchemy, who lived in Alexandria around 300 CE. And he wrote that fallen angels who had children with humans taught mankind alchemy and all the arts of nature. And he insisted the legends predated history and were literally true. So there were many early Hermetic writers who spoke of the same superhuman race and their interactions with humans. And there's an alchemist by the name of Clement of Alexandria who said the visitors laid bare the secrets of the metals, understood the virtues of plants and the force of magical incantations, and their learning even extended to the science of the stars. It's weird because you find these little pieces of writings all over the place about these ancient visitors. Now, in an ancient Egyptian text called Isis the Prophetess to her son Horus, Isis begins teaching her son the principles of alchemy and tells him how she acquired her skills. Okay, I think we're all familiar with Isis. So according to her story, she had gone to this place called Hormanuthi. Now, Hormanuthi is actually that temple that was hidden near the Nile River where those angelic visitors were in ancient Egypt, okay? So she goes to this this temple called Hormanuthi to learn the sacred art. And she met one of the visitors who was so overcome by physical lust for her, okay? So Isis, she agrees to satisfy his hunger if he would disclose the secrets, but he refused. Eventually, she met a visitor, and when I say visitor, it's one of these alien race people, it's one of these beings, whomever, who agreed to her demands. And so Isis was initiated into the mysteries of alchemy. According to legend, Isis, her brother and sister, her husband Osiris, and five similar divine beings settled at Heliopolis, which became the center for alchemy in Egypt. I don't know. I don't know if any of this is true. None of us know for sure, but it's these stories are all connected kind of by this common thread, which is there were these, you know, the appearance of these visitors, of these beings who came down to earth, and they shared all this knowledge. To some people like Zachariah Sitchin and Eric von Daniken, who believe that this race of people kind of, you know, used the humans there as like a slave race to help mine gold and have them produce technology, etc. You have kind of those theories floating out there. You also have this race of people, or this race of ancient aliens who came to teach people about like these magical arts, about metallurgy, about beautification. And, you know, another common thread is that they all loved the women and wanted to impregnate them. And they all created these kind of like demigod beings, these giants. Do I believe any of this? I don't know. To be perfectly blunt with you, I don't know. But the fact of the matter is you do find here and there these little writings from Greek alchemists who kind of talk about this. So I, you know, and the other question I always ask myself when I'm doing these really strange, when I'm doing this research on these topics, I always ask myself at the end of it, does it matter? Is this super important? And what would I do with this knowledge if I had it? How would it change people? You know, if this was very true, oh, it would change the world. I'm 100% sure. But I think, you know, using the theory of ancient astronauts, ancient aliens as our origin story, I don't know if that would really hold for a lot of people. But the fact that a lot of these ancient astronaut theorists or hypothesizers say that we were genetically modified, that they interfered in our genetic modification, and that's why you can't find that missing link. That's why here you have Neanderthals and then you have Homo sapiens. But where did that jump happen? Where this is, you know, the question that a lot of physical anthropologists have, right? And here you have these ancient alien theorists who jump in and say, oh, I know how this happened. Well, these ancient aliens came and they were sleeping with the people and they modified them, or they actually just altered their DNA, and therefore you have Homo sapiens. There's a lot more to these theories, but I kind of wanted to give you like a general overview so you can really think for yourself whether or not this was a possibility. And maybe it is possible. I don't really know, and I probably won't ever know until I cross over, and even then I don't know at that point that I would care. But it's an interesting story. You guys, I've done my best. I really hope that you enjoyed this talk today. And if you want, you can pick up those books for yourself. You have Chariots of the Gods by Eric von Daniken. And then you also have Zachariah Sitchin's The 12th Planet as well. And then you can pick up your, you know, dusty old Bible from a hotel room and just flip to Genesis. And I believe to Numbers as well. And you can check out some of the information written about the Nephilim in the Bible. Thank you so much for listening today. I hope everybody is doing well, and I look forward to talking to you soon.